Northern Brewer is the proud sponsor of the Brewing Network's Jameel Show. They have the widest selection of domestic and imported malts and grain, hops from all over the world, and a full line of liquid and dry yeast. No matter what style of beer you're brewing, Northern Brewer has the ingredients you need, plus fast shipping and expert staff to help you make the best beer possible. Please visit northernbrewer.com for all things homebrew.
All homebrewers have a favorite commercial beer, but not everyone can make it. Welcome to the show that teaches you how, where you can challenge two masters, Jamil Zainashev and Tasty McDole. This is the Jamil Show. Can you brew it? Now here's Jamil.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. I guess this is the Moyle show. You hear the sound of the Moyle taking the...
Is that what that was?
The circumcision there, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
wow.
Right.
Take
that tip right off.
Like
oh, God. Mm. See, I know it's me that makes all this... The stupid stuff happened. Without me, this would all be like proper.
It wouldn't be as stupid.
It wouldn't be as stupid. It would be proper information. People would be learning things. Show would go much faster. You know, it'd be like a half hour of high quality information. Instead, with me, it's an hour and 15 minutes of so information. It's all my fault. I know it.
Something to do, isn't it? I mean, come on. We're here.
I thought you were going to say, well, I don't disagree with what you just said. Yeah. No, we're doing...
Well, I can't be the judge. Somebody else is the judge of that.
The listeners.
The listeners, yes.
Sure, they're falling off at a rapid pace.
No, they're loyal.
No, I think, you know, this new show gives people an opportunity to get something that a lot of people have requested over the years. You get a lot of requests for, hey, can you help me, you know, make this style of beer? You know, I really love, you know, this beer. I can't get it anymore.
Yeah, right.
You
Everybody know. Runs into their to beers and they say, well, I wish I could make this beer myself.
Yeah. I was on vacation with my, you know.
Right, especially if you can't get it where you're at.
Yeah, and I really love this beer. I'd do anything. You know, I'd buy every last drop they have, but, you know, they don't sell it out here. You know, help me make this beer. Yeah. And that's what we're here to do. And not just, you know, come up with an acceptable recipe, but we'll brew that recipe and we'll compare them side by side.
Right.
And, you know, we'll guarantee that, you know, that recipe makes that clone of that beer.
And if it doesn't, we'll tell you that and we'll...
You can punch Chad in the junk.
Try to do it again.
Put on the cup, Chad, because you never know when you know,
we're
how well we're going to do. Ah, yes. So, Justin, what's our challenge for the day? What's our reason for living?
We all do need one, don't we? All right, this
Some
one
of us more than others.
This one came through from George Fuller. I'm not sure where he's from, actually, but what we had him do was call in and ask the question himself. So here's George presenting you your challenge today.
Hi, guys. One of my favorite beers to drink is Double Barrel Ale by Firestone Walker. I love wood-aged beers, and I can't seem to get that same quality in my beer. It's just such a great example of an oak-aged beer. Can you brew it?
I am a big fan of Firestone Walker. Matt Brindleson and their Double Barrel Ale. I buy, you know, probably at least a bomber a week or every
my fridge is stocked
or so
all the time.
That's great stuff. I'm kind of excited to see this one come through. I want to see this one clone, so I'll know how to make it.
You do, huh?
Well, I'll probably still just buy the the Firestone beer because it's really good, and you know.
Yeah, but if you could make your own, it's almost as good, or maybe even.
You know,
your taste a little bit better, maybe even, you know, because that's what you can do. Once you get the beer cloned, you can say, now, what would I like, you know, about this beer? If I had my brewery, what would I change about this? And it's a good starting point for a beer. clone of a commercial beer.
I'm a big fan of what H%. I'm a big fan of what Firestone Walker's doing with all their barrel program. You know, they do that whole barrel thing. So that's really neat. And a lot of great beers coming out of there. Union Jack and, their Walker's Reserve and, you know, a lot of great beers. So, Tasty, this was your challenge.
Right.
And how'd you go about it? What was the process you went through on this?
Well, the problem we're having with the starting up the show is that we need to have the beers sort of mm-hmm. before we have the brewers interviews, and we sort of like
so we had to kind of jump the gun on
yeah,
this
yeah we kind
one,
of gravitated or? To this one because I had brewed a clone of this beer before,
mm-hmm.
and which I brewed. I actually brewed it, I think, about 14 days ago from this very minute,
mm-hmm. and then we interviewed Matt.
Then he says, well, they've changed it up over time. And,
right.
I haven't been, brewing it over time. So what he has to say when I brewed are somewhat different. We can talk about those differences.
Okay. So we got a great interview with Matt Brindleson, who's very generous with his information this time.
Yeah,
Matt is one of the great guys
out
there.
He's just a great guy. And as you listen to him, you'll
extremely supportive.
Smart and really open about the recipe.
Really knows his stuff.
Right.
All right, so we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get that interview with Matt and Tasty.
Okay, so my double IPA has an ABV of 7.5 and a clarity of brilliant, so that's a plus 8. I pour it.
Sorry, looks like she found it unpalatable.
Ha!
Shut up, Doug.
My creek gets a plus 10 versus girls because it's a fruit beer.
You can't open the bottle, and she walks over to the guy with the Pinot Grigio.
This sucks!
Ugh, I hate it when Greg's the brewmaster.
What's this? Non-Alcoholics Anonymous?
Dude, get out of here. We're in the middle of a brew session.
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Have you ever been called upon to explain why it's named India Pale Ale? Do you burp Y-Yeast 3522 and Crap Cascade? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the Tongue Splitter.
I've got dry hop stuck in my braces.
And the Bourbon Barrel Porter.
Now on tap in the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com. White Labs, your source for maltose mowing monsters, announces the White Labs Platinum lineup for 2009. Looking for out-of-the-ordinary yeast to make the best beer possible? The Platinum strains from White Labs are only available for a limited time and make your homebrew stand out. Through February, find Australian Ale, Essex Ale, and Dusseldorf Alt Yeast. March and April, it's Nottingham Ale, Abbey 4, and Mexican Lager Yeast. And May through June, don't miss Premium Bitter Ale, Belgian Wit 2, and Belgian Bastogne Ale Yeast. Keep up with all the great yeasts in the White Labs Platinum Program at whitelabs.com, where you can also join the White Labs Customer Club. Brew with the freshest and most unique yeast with the White Labs 2009 Platinum Strains. White Labs. It's all in the vial.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
The listenership gets younger and younger.
I know.
Or I'm getting older. I don't know. Or they turn into munchkins from Wizard of Oz or something.
Yeah, I guess you don't have to be 21 to listen to this stuff.
I guess not.
We don't ask, do production
for the show.
Exactly.
Child labor laws are totally not observed here. Yep. All right, so we had a great interview with Matt Brindleson, and he was very generous with his time, and like he always is. Every time I run into that guy, he's full of information, very knowledgeable, and very generous with his time. Here's the interview with Matt. We're speaking with Matt Brindleson, brewmaster at Firestone Walker Brewing Company. Hey, Matt, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing really good.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I am a big fan of your beers. I think, since you got there at Firestone Walker, things have really gotten exciting. I like Union Jack, the Double Barrel Ale, which we're talking about tonight, and pretty much everything you've done.
Thank you, thank you.
So, can you give us a little background on how you came to be at Firestone Walker and how you came into brewing?
Oof, okay. My background is chemistry, at least. I studied health science and chemistry in college. And my first job out of college was working for Kalamazoo Spice Extraction Company. So I really wasn't looking for a brewing job out of college. I was looking for something more in the organic chemistry or medical field. And long story short, I got fortuitously placed in their hops extraction laboratory. They're making hop extracts for some of the larger brewers. In fact, that company held many of the patents for Tetra and some of the other light stable hop extracts, which maybe aren't that much interest to home brewers, but it's actually pretty interesting chemistry. And they sent me to the Siebel Institute of Brewing Technology for basically for an education in brewing so I could interface better with our customers. And once I learned that I could actually make a living making beer, it was game over. I promptly put in my resignation and went on to work for Goose Island Brewing Company in Chicago. And I think up until that time, I was an avid home brewer. I mean, kind of a sick and wrong home brewer. I was brewing all the time. And I think my main focus was on smaller scale type brewing. I was kind of geeked out on the process, so once I got to Goose Island and started working more of a production setting, I really found my niche. And although I've had a little bit of exposure to brew pubs, and I have some involvement in setting up the Peace Brewery in Chicago and helping some other pub brewers, I've really kind of thrived in the production environment. And because I was at Goose Island, they really had a similar... It was kind of nice because they had a similar program as far as the styles of beer that they produced in relation to what Firestone Walker is doing. So when I did leave Goose Island and moved out to California to join Firestone, it was an actual fairly easy transition when it came to knowing the types of yeasts and the beers that we were producing. So I guess, you know, ultimately you're talking about Double Barrel Ale today, and Goose Island's flagship beer, Honkers Ale, is what I would consider in the same class of beers, English Pale Ale / English Bitter.
Well, no, what I would say is the similarity between Peace and Goose Island and Firestone Walker is all excellent beers, you know, high quality, you know, well-balanced beers. So,
it's
not
interesting.
Difficult
I think
to...
that, Goose Island and Firestone are similar in that the majority of the portfolio for many years have been session beers, lower alcohol beers, real drinkers. Honkers, I think, is 4.5% or 5% alcohol. DBA, Double Barrel Ale, is 5% alcohol. Our Pale Ale is 4.5%. And so, you know, we've really, I guess when you're making lower alcohol beers, you really have to be a stickler for the, you know, the attention to detail, because the flaws will show themselves a little easier in a lighter beer.
Well, an opportunity to provide lots of flavor. I'm a big fan of lower alcohol beers, you know, beers that I can have many of instead of just drinking one and being done for the night. I like to enjoy all the flavors. So session beers with a lot of flavor and well-balanced, not just over the top in one area or the other, but something that intrigues me with every sip and something I can drink a lot of. And I think... especially the Double Barrel Ale, I'm a big fan of for those reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the other thing too is, you know, I'm a little guy. I don't have a lot of blood pulsing through my veins, so I need these lower alcohol beers so I can actually drink them.
I think you got plenty of blood coursing through there. You seem pretty animated. Speaking of animated, what beers? Might you be working on in the lab that we may see soon that you're excited about? You know, Union Jack, you kept that undercover for a long time, and then it came out, and everybody was just thrilled with that beer. That is one fantastic IPA.
You know, historically, Firestone has made very few beers and never did seasonals, and the company's now 12 years old. Getting the IPA out took a lot of arm twisting and convincing that a product like that would enhance the portfolio. I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer for us brewers, but you know, the owners are really or have been historically very slow to move into new styles and doing stuff. But this year, we are going to release a number of kind of, I use the word trial. I mean, a lot of these are beers that we've brewed before, but we're actually going to officially release a line of seasonal draft beers.
Oh.
I think that's public information anyway.
It is now.
It is now. So some of you have maybe tried our oatmeal stout that we affectionately call Velvet Merkin. So that's going to come up again. In fact, we just finished another round of that beer, and that's a beer that spends short contact time, 30 days in bourbon barrels, so it picks up just a little bit of bourbon character, but it's kind of an interesting beer. In the tanks now, we have a beer called Little Opal, and that beer's genesis was a brew, and we saved the second worts from a wheat wine and fermented that with Saison yeast, and people really liked it. So
now we tried that up at the anniversary party up in Napa's last year, right?
I think I did send a keg.
That was fantastic.
It was good.
So yeah, in the latest batch, we did. You know, in all truth, we didn't actually brew a wheat wine this time. We brewed the Little Opal straight.
Mm-hmm.
It's always kind of a mixed culture. We use both the Saison, but also our house ale yeast, to make sure we get to the finish line in a timely manner. And the twist this year is I've secured a number of French oak barrels, basically neutral white wine barrels. I got Chardonnay, some Viognier, and some Sauv Blanc barrels from three different producers. And all of the Little Opal is going to do its cold time, or it's basically its lagering period in French oak in our cold room. So it should really add some complexity and be really nice.
Oh, that's fantastic news.
I mean, we're working on it's just a concept at this point, a double IPA. No promises, but that's something I've wanted to do for a while.
If it's anything like the Union Jack,
yeah.
I'm salivating,
you know,
already.
Do a double the Union Jack. It's going to be, you know, barley wine class style stuff, but we'll see.
Well, you know, anything that you've produced that I've tried has been fantastic.
Thank you so much. You know, we did a beer dinner last night with Sean Paxton, the homebrew chef, and he just knocked it out of the park. And it was all Firestone beers. It's the first time I've done a dinner just exclusively with Sean and our beers. And it was so nice to see how well the beers were received, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we're sequestered away in the brewery, and we're not really sure how people are, if they're digging the beers or not, but it was a nice night.
We're loving them. Keep brewing them. Well, and you know, one of the things that a lot of people have asked for is a clone of your double barrel ale. Well, quite a few listeners have requested that, and that's Tasty's challenge: is to brew a clone of the Firestone Walker double barrel ale. So we got some questions for you here, and maybe you can help us out.
Well, I'm going to brew it, but I'm going to need Matt's help. So, Matt, help me out here.
Okay.
All right. So, first off, I think you already mentioned this. What is the ABV of this double barrel?
The target ABV is 5%.
Okay. And IBUs, what are you looking for there?
Again, target is 30 IBUs.
Okay.
It's interesting, the barrel part of the fermentation. We end up getting a little different IBU off the barrels, and I don't know if we have time for all that.
No, we do. Go ahead. Tell us about that.
So that beer might vary between 27.5 and 31 IBUs.
And the barrel, the difference is the barrel extracts more IBUs? Or less?
Well, you know, this is just a guess. I'm not going to say that this is for sure. But I think with all this, with the surface area and the vigor of the fermentation in the barrel compared to stainless steel, we lose a little bit. You know, I mean, you probably notice this when you make high-gravity beers. You make a beer where you over-pitch, so you have a lot of yeast in solution,
right,
or you have a really vigorous fermentation, you tend to drive more isoalfacet out of solution. I mean,
it consumes the
at the end of the day, isoalfacet isn't as soluble in aqueous solution as we think, and it's easy to knock it out.
Well, and it coats the cell walls. It's the same thing that affects bacteria and holds down bacteria replication. Is it coats those cell walls, and then they can't reproduce. So the more yeast you pitch, the more yeast you have in solution, the more it tends to bind to that isoalpha acid and drop it out of solution.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to do wort IBUs and then do finished beer IBUs, and it really is sometimes shocking how much is knocked out of solution through fermentation.
Hmm. Now, anyway. Yeah, that's fine. That was interesting. Now you don't put all the double barrel in, through barrels. That's you blend back.
No, the target is a 20% of a given fermentation will be taken to the barrels.
To the barrels.
And there's a little bit of seasonal flux in the actual percentage that goes to trade. It can probably get down to 15%, and really what it comes down to is doing a lot of sensory and just making sure that we can keep that oak component within our spec.
Right. Okay. So you'll go lower if it seems to deserve it.
I mean, sometimes there's production demand that
I understand. Yeah.
Make us stretch it a little bit.
Right. We have a lot more of this than that, so let's just be practical here. All right. So I'm going to need some malt to make this beer. What would you suggest I use?
Well, I think to make double barrel ale, definitely we're drawing most of our two row barley from either domestic sources or Canadian sources.
Mm-hmm.
I like blending Maris Otter or another English pale with domestic pales to kind of bring some of that English quality to it.
Sure.
I don't think that this beer requires 100% Maris Otter, and certainly we're not using 100% Maris Otter here in the brewery.
Right.
But remember, we're trying to replicate an English-style pale ale with this beer, so some of that English pale malt quality is nice.
Makes sense.
What kind of a blend are you using?
You know, these days, the blend has also changed over time. There was a time when it was as high as 50%. English malts have become very expensive, as we've brewed this beer over time, we've tried to take some of the cloying sweetness out of the finish and some of that real biscuity malt character out of the finish over time gradually, I think. So I think we're probably down to about 20% of the base malt, Maris Otter.
Mm-hmm. All right, so of the total grain bill, you would say that the Maris Otter would be like, what, 15% and two row?
Well, and let's
got,
just do 20-80 on the base.
84% of the recipe is base malt.
Okay, so 84 between the two. Okay.
Yeah.
And then 20-80 on that.
There you go.
80-20 there. Okay.
We'll apply a
some high math
abacus to
some
it.
Some high math.
Get the abacus.
We'll figure it out.
All right. Well, you got a nice, really nice color in this beer. How are you getting that? And I assume you're getting some flavor there too.
Yeah. What I kind of consider part of the base of this beer is we also add to that about 7% Munich malt.
Munich.
And, you know, Munich malt gives you a little bit of that toasty, maybe it could be perceived as biscuity character, fills out the body a little bit. I tend to be a fan. You know, you talk to a bunch of brewers, some people use a little bit of wheat in all their ales, some people use a little bit of fake flaked barley. I use a little bit of Munich in just about everything I brew.
Sure.
I'm with you on that. What Lovibond Munich are you using?
10. Yeah, Munich 10. And, you know, as far as the source for that, we've actually been using Great Westerns, so domestically malted Munich, and which is prevalent at least for production breweries here on the West Coast. I'm also a huge fan of the Gambrinus Munich malt.
Hmm.
I think either of those work really well and have a nice flavor.
Okay, now also we're looking. What do you have? Do you add chocolate malt to this, or is there some other
crystal malt?
Yeah, on the color side, it's pretty simple. 6% Crisp actually is our source for caramel malts for Double Barrel Ale. We use Crisp C77, okay. 6% of the grist bill.
Gotcha.
And then we add to that also 2% of the grist bill is Crisp C120.
Gotcha.
And we've always, I mean, I think since day one, Firestone has been a big user of Crisp, crystal malts, caramel malts, you know, all the color malts.
And what other specialty malts in that beer?
And then there is a dash of chocolate, just shy of
1%. 1%.
So for us, there's 20 pounds of chocolate malt in a 50-barrel batch in our brewery.
Is that 400 Lovibond chocolate or 350?
Yep. I think it's Breese regular chocolate, so I think that's right around 450, if memory serves me correctly. And then when it comes to roasted malts, I'm a huge fan of Breese. We're so far away from Breese, sometimes it just doesn't make sense to use a lot of their other malts. When I brewed in the Midwest, I use a lot of Breese malts, but I can't live without Breese chocolate malt or Breese roast barley.
And those travel really well, right? I think that's what you're saying, right? They store
and
travel better.
Yeah, you know, and like for Velvet Merkin, for instance, I don't think I can do it without the Breese roast. I love it.
Yeah, they make some great products. It's a good company. Great products.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so it sounds like that's it for the malts then, right? I think it adds
yep,
up pretty
that's
close
it.
To 100 there. And we're going to need...
You know, I was going to add the other thing that adding some of that, the English malts are so highly modified. It tends, in our experience, to improve runoff and extract. So it's another upswing to spending a little extra money for the Maris.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And how about the hop profile?
Hops. Well, you know, the idea with this beer is to keep it very English. And so the hops, we have changed our bittering hop over time. And certainly with the hop crisis, we played around with hops more in this beer than ever before. But the standard issue for this beer is the very original recipe was a very small, only 5 IBU charge of Magnum hops. I've always been kind of a fan of German Magnums or even domestically grown Magnums for bittering. But like I said, we're only adding 5 IBUs in the front end. So, you know, that's a very small addition. It's really, in my mind, it's about as much as you can get away with to keep the foam down, keep from a boil over. So we're really waiting to pack a lot of the hops into the back end of this beer, even though it's not a real hop-pronounced beer, to try to drive some of that English quality to the finish.
Yeah, late addition. That's a good thing to do to a beer. So okay, so what are you using for the flavor hops and finishing hops on this beer?
Yeah, the flavor hops are East Kent Goldings,
EKG,
and Styrian Goldings. And that has always been the blend in the finish of that beer. And, of course, some of this is calculated based on alpha of the hops. So we've had some kind of squirreliness in the Styrian Golding market, and there's been some low alphas in some years and some high. But typically it's about a 50-50 blend of East Kents and Styrians. And I think I wrote about this in New Brewers, Imergy, I can't remember, but this year with the hop crisis and everything, actually 2 years ago there was a complete crop failure in Slovenia, and so Styrian Goldings were just almost impossible to obtain. And, you know, we hold very high contracts, and we got calls saying, hey, we can give you about, you know, 40%, 60% of your contract. So we went around and did some creative, you know, trial brewing and really tried to figure out how to mimic that same Styrian Golding character with other hops.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it's a tough one. U.S. Fuggle is a hop that we kind of go to as a replacement for Styrian. And let's see, even like we did a blend of Willamette and German Tradition, which neither of them really made sense or smelled like Styrian on their own, but we were able to kind of mimic Styrians with that blend. And I think that's always important to remember, because a hop like Styrian Golding, especially in lean years, I don't know about on the homebrew level, but certainly at ours, sometimes the quality, it's just not even worth going there.
Yeah, we're not seeing any Styrian Goldings on the homebrew side. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I would be cautious if you did. Like, where do they come from?
Yeah.
How old are they?
Yeah, really.
And sometimes, you know, going to the best domestic equivalent, like U.S. Fuggle, you're going to get a fresher hop, and at the end of the day, you'll probably make a better beer.
Yeah. All right, so EKG, what, a 15-minute addition there, or?
We actually had one, again, a very small 5-IBU addition 30 minutes before the end of knockout.
I see.
We on our brew house, we have a very vigorous boil. We boil this beer for only 75 minutes total. So it's not quite an hour and a half boil, but that addition comes at 30 minutes before the end of knockout.
Gotcha. And then the steering is a late addition, like 5 minutes or flame out?
Yeah, well, only a portion of the East Kent. And then a large charge of an equal blend of East Kent Goldings and Styrian in the whirlpool. So after you cut flame, or on the homebrew level, if you consider that, but you turn the heat off the boil, or at the end of boil, and then you go to your whirlpool, that's when we add in the finishing hops.
So you're putting 20 IBUs in there?
Yeah.
Better balance of that. Okay. Wow.
And, you know, that has been our best strategy for maintaining some of that nice Styrian and East Kent aroma in the finish. Again, it doesn't leap out of the glass at you, and we don't want it to, but we definitely want that English kind of, or, you know, Styrian Golding slash English hop character to come through in the finish. I always think of, like, those additions 30 minutes before the end of boil is kind of one of... you know, it's a flavor addition, I kind of a lot of times call it.
Mm-hmm.
David Ryder always talks about glycoside pickups in those 30-minute before knockout, and so maybe even some hop texture. But it's such a small charge, I don't think it has an overwhelmingly profound effect on the finished beer. It just adds some complexity.
And change the pH of the boil or something a little bit.
Sure, yeah.
Let's see now, what did you mash at? I didn't ask you that.
Oh, okay. We do an upward step infusion. We strike at 145 degrees Fahrenheit, or 63°C, I guess that would be.
Uh-huh.
And we rest. If you can imagine, this is a mash mixer. It has a large agitator, so we can mash in, agitate, utilize steam to come up to our next rest temperature. But we strike at 145, and we hold it there for 60 minutes.
60. Wow. And then you just mash off? Do you raise it up to mash off then? Is that
no. Or
sparge off?
This is a pretty common mash program for a lot of our beers. We would take it then up to 155 degrees Fahrenheit and hold it there for an additional 15 minutes, or at least until conversion, and do a starch or an iodine test.
Okay.
And then we mash off. So our mash off temperatures are a little lower by some brewery standards, but we'll take it up as high as 168. 169 max.
Hmm.
And then in our system, we move it then to the lauter tun to a separate vessel. But before we go to the end of that, in the water chemistry here, we have a reverse osmosis plant, so we have very, very clean and wonderful water, but very low mineral content, obviously.
Sure, you stripped it out.
Zero.
Mm-hmm.
So we're using both gypsum and a little bit of calcium chloride to Burtonize the water.
You use the same water for all your beers, or just the English beer?
Well, the mineral additions or the salt additions would be different just about on every beer. There's
okay.
A little
every
different
beer.
Something going
okay.
on. Great. I mean, at this level, a lot of what we're doing on the Burtonizing or using calcium-based salts for the upstream stuff, we base those additions on what we see in finished beer, and we like to see a certain level of calcium in the finished beer, and calcium oxalate tends to be a problem in some finished beers, and it's probably more than we need to be talking about. Where I'm going with that.
Sounds like a production problem to me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see. This looks like a beer that I can definitely make. You've given me a lot of information here. Definitely helps with the hops. And, you got a question?
Yeah. So, now that you get your wort, what about fermentation? What about yeast and
that's right.
All that. What kind of yeast?
Yeah, the workhorse house ale strain here is proprietary for Firestone, but it's probably closest to British ale yeast, or some people use a London ale yeast that's pretty similar to ours. I think Firestone beers have some qualities similar, at least yeast qualities similar to Fuller's beers. So
mm-hmm. Fuller's yeast
that they use. Right. We cool in this beer at 17°C, and we ferment at 19°C.
Which is about 65 to 67?
Yeah, I guess Fahrenheit. Cooling in at about 63 mm-hmm. and fermenting at about 66, 67, yeah. And then what really makes Double Barrel Ale stand apart from other beers is we pitch that wort with the yeast. We allow it to ferment only 24 hours in stainless steel. And then we move that fermenting wort over to the union set. And that basically is then allowed to ferment at kind of free range, no temperature control in the barrels, to terminal gravity. And then we do the diastole rest in the barrels. And then we move it from the barrels back to a stainless steel tank for the cold stabilization step.
So your union set is reminiscent of the Burton unions, where you've got the vessels and the yeast kind of, for better lack of terms, bubbles up to the top and settles back in and all that. Is that?
Yeah, on our system in Burton on Trent, they would actually collect the yeast that comes off of the barrels. You know, so if you would need to imagine a barrel and, you know, almost the equivalent of a fermentation lock, only using a hose and a bucket or something like that. In our system, we'll get a lot of yeast and foam coming over that. We don't collect and reuse that, but in Burton-on-Trent, the tradition has been, and actually the main focus of Marston's program in Burton-on-Trent, is to collect that yeast and use that as a yeast harvesting tool.
Gotcha.
Well, and you have a lot of experience with those British brewers, and as a matter of fact, you went over there, and didn't you assist in brewing some batches over there just recently?
Yeah, it was a great honor. We didn't do Double Barrel over there. We did a recipe similar to our Pale 31, kind of a California style pale ale that we brewed at Marston. So yeah, it was like pinch me. It was awesome.
Well, and I think they probably benefited from a lot of the things, you know.
You know, yeah, that's a whole other story, the traditional use of hops there and how they handle their hops compared to what we do here in the United States. But, you know, we basically tried to showcase American style.
Did you scare them?
I'm sorry?
Did you scare them by what you
suggested?
There's
one picture of me, like, dumping the hops in the kettle and the two people behind me having their
freaking
hands
out
over their mouths. But, you know, I don't know.
It's not the way it's done there.
So, you know, I would say if you've got a clone Double Barrel Ale, oak needs to be a part of the program.
Now, what we have, you know, some choices in oak. You know, we have, like, you know, Western or French. Which way would
American,
we go
there? Hungarian, French,
yeah.
So
we're using,
medium.
Yeah, we're using 100% American oak.
Okay.
People that have brewed this on the homebrew scale before liked using the cubes
mm-hmm.
over, you know, I don't know, I'm sure there's shavings,
chips,
other things. Some brewers have, and certainly a lot of winemakers that don't have the option of fermenting in a barrel or don't want to, use staves or wood pieces that are tied down to the bottom of the fermenter, because, of course, if you just throw oak cubes into a carboy or a fermenter, they're going to want to float. So if you want maximum contact, you try to figure out how to hold them down somehow, maybe. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, part of the flavor profile of that beer is a certainly perceivable American oak.
Definitely.
Flavor and aroma. Okay.
What toast level?
Our barrels are medium to medium plus.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And probably every barrel manufacturer, that might mean something a little bit different, but it's certainly not charred.
Well, I tell you, I find myself enjoying that beer every time I find it on draft. I order it and buy myself bombers of it at the local BevMo on a regular basis. I must drink at least a bomber of a Double Barrel every week or two, you know, and with all the other beers I've got choices of. So it's absolutely one of my favorites and clearly a favorite of all our listeners.
It's highly requested here in this show.
And I'll tell you, Matt, I don't think anybody's come as close to providing the level of detail. I don't think anyone will ever match the level of detail you provided on brewing a clone beer. I think
I just broke all our trade secrets. I'm screwed. I'm going to lose my job.
I think a lot of people respect you for being so generous with your information and knowledge and ability to brew great beer. So everybody go out and buy a whole bunch of Firestone Walker right now so Matt keeps his job.
Yep.
Well, and if you don't, then, you know, public's going to miss out on a lot of the other great beers that are coming up.
Yeah, drink it up. It'll keep it fresh out there.
Yeah, it's great stuff,
too. I think the beer is best presented. You know, my favorite version of this beer, and we had it at the beer dinner last night, 100% oak fermented, so beer that's just coming from the Union Set, unfiltered, and cask conditioned, you know, pulled out of a firkin with a beer engine is my favorite kind of presentation of that beer.
You're driving me firkin crazy. You're going to be up at the Homebrewers Conference in Oakland in June?
I sure think I am, yes.
I think you're going to be talking about wood-aged beers and and using wood and producing great beers at the conference.
Yeah.
At least you're on the schedule for it, so in case you haven't been notified yet.
I'm there.
Okay.
To show up, you'll know what to do.
Great. Thank you so much, Matt. You've been great here, as you have always been on the Brewing Network and all the homebrewer events that you attend so generously with your time. And we really appreciate it.
All right, guys. Well, thanks a lot for having me on.
All right. Thank you very much. Take care.
Okay, I rolled a 15, and I get a +2 from my yeast starter.
Nope, sorry, you failed your roll. Your beer is infected.
No way!
You had to beat a 24. It's Schizosaccharomyces.
This sucks! I just failed versus oxidation! Our party is fracked. Doug's the only one left, and his beer is a Berliner Weiss.
What's this? A tea party?
Hey, this is a brew session, man. Get lost!
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Does your significant other know the difference between an Irish red ale and a Flanders red ale? Do you burp, drizzle, spalt, and fart Y-Yeast 2308? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the socially awkward Patter's beer and the sci-fi convention. Showstopper number 8. Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
Nico, listen, our lawyer said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids. Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in the can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Live. Beer Radio. Brewing Network.com.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
The Brewing Network.
And now, Suck It Tasty.
Suck It Tasty.
Man, kids don't like me now. What do I do to deserve this abuse?
I don't know. What's,
I think it's a term of endearment, don't you, that suck it thing?
Yeah.
That's what I'm rationalizing it anyway.
Right, yeah. I tell my wife all the time, suck it, dear.
It's a privilege, she says. You wouldn't... All right.
Oh, this is what Chad's beer will do to me.
This is proof we do not edit.
Yeah, we don't edit a darn thing. No. Justin's too damn lazy.
Well, he doesn't. Yeah,
he can't do anything. No, you know, we got to get Chad brewing some of these clone brews.
Oh, yeah, he'll have his chance at bat.
That boy can brew. He knows what the heck he's doing around a...
Should have had him do this one. Well,
why? Well, and how about that Matt Brennelson? I tell
you know that Matt, man, that was just a great session we had with him.
He'll help you out with all sorts of stuff. Don't bug him, though.
No. Well, we could. He'll brew it for us if we ask him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. So you took on the challenge of brewing this, and unfortunately, you were under a handicap.
With the timing.
Hey, Tasty, before you talk to Matt, go ahead and brew this beer, let's see if you got even close.
Right.
You know.
Right,
so.
As he said in the interview, that they've changed it over time. And you know the recipe
moving
that
target.
I had. I'd say about probably 3 years ago, I thought I had cloned the double barrel. I had them side by side. I brewed my beer. I had them side by side. And, you know, color, flavor. I'd pour them in a glass. I'd mix up the glasses so I don't know which one's which.
Was that back when you were doing heavy shrooms and acid? Or
I don't know. My palate is still developing, so maybe I was back in my infancy there. Could have been it. Anyway, so...
He
says that his base malt is 80% Western Two Row and 20% Maris Otter. Well, the recipe that I was brewing from was more like 60-40. And then on the hop side, he has 30 IBUs, and 20 of those IBUs are at the end of the boil. Where I have like the reverse. I have like a traditional beer that's most of the IBUs are in the 60 minute.
Well, let's go around and we tasted this during the break, and let's see what we got here as far as opinions from blind tasting. Chad, what did you have? What were your thoughts on the two?
I thought Tasty's beer was a little more bitter, a little more hoppier, of course, with the 60-minute edition. The color was a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think they were both... clean beers, but basically
both well
a lot
brewed.
More oak going on with the Firestone, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Just a smoother, maybe smoother beer, not as edgy as maybe Mike's with the bitterness.
Right. Okay. And so cloned or not cloned?
Not cloned.
Not cloned. All right, Justin, what did you have in your blind tasting?
Not cloned.
Not cloned.
Mm. Not cloned. Missing the wood flavor for sure. Although you did have wood in your recipe, right, Tasty?
Yeah, I did. Had it.
Not enough wood for you?
Not enough wood.
I could do more wood. When I made it before, it seemed easy to have too much wood flavor
because
it is pretty subtle in this beer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I only do like 5 days of oak cubes in it. So I would change that next time.
Yeah. I guess you can talk about how to change that. Color was pretty different.
Mm-hmm.
I thought out of the two, Tasty's was darker.
Right.
But I'll tell you this. All right. So previous show, I was cloning something that was a darker color, more darker brown, and Tasty's cloning something that's kind of in a deep golden color. The lighter the color of the beer, the more obvious the difference.
Mm, yeah.
So if you're brewing a couple of stouts, it's pretty easy to
black is black.
You could be off by 10 SRM, 20 SRM. You go, that's pretty darn close. You're brewing a Helles, and you like an SRM of 2, an SRM of 3. You go, you really screwed up here. This is darker.
Yeah.
Right? So the lighter the beer, so that's one thing, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Now, I liked the beer. It was a good beer.
It's well brewed.
But it wasn't Firestone DBA. Yeah.
No,
so I say my vote is not cloned.
All right.
Well. I have to go that way also. I think not cloned, but two well brewed beers, but clearly we didn't have the recipe dialed in.
Yeah.
Tasty obviously one of the best brewers around. So he's able to do whatever he wants, but in this case he was kind of working blind. So he didn't have a chance to do that. I think I'd echo what both of you are saying. You need more wood flavor. Did you use the American medium toast?
Yeah, so I used I did do that. It was the Western medium toast.
Okay,
yes.
And I also kind of picked up kind of a sweet sherry kind of character to the, which I never really noticed in the double barrel ale, until we compared them, you know, blind.
Yeah.
And the other one, yours seemed more bitter. It had a lot more hop character than the double barrel did.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how much hop character. And then slightly darker and a little drier and roastier than the double barrel. But, again, you know, working blind, you know, I'll give you a pass on on this one.
Well, it's a do-over, for sure.
Yeah, but we'll do it over, and we'll make sure that you know, the listeners are going to get a recipe that's going to clone the beer.
Yeah.
That's what we do here. You know, we... sorry. Are not going to...
I'm going to leave you hanging.
Yeah, yeah. We're not walking away
from anything.
You know, yeah. Yeah,
I'm walking away from a fight.
Bring it, and we'll make it happen. All right, so Tasty, you know, tell us about, you know, how you started, and I know you had you know, a previous recipe. The beer has changed over the last 3 years, as Matt was saying. You know, what did you start with, and where do you figure you should target? Where do you figure you should go? I think most important is the recipe for where we're going, right?
Yeah, I mean,
where you started.
Well, I talked a little bit about it. You know, it had the you know, like Matt described his beer, it's got both Western Two Row and Maris Otter, I totaled about 86% base malts, but I had it split 60-40, and he splits it 80-20. My beer, I think the Maris was more pronounced. I don't know if you guys picked up on that, but yeah, I definitely noticed that it was more. More malty in that way, like Maris English style. Let's see what else. I just used Crystal 75, where his beer has not only Crystal 75, but it also has Crystal 120. And the 120 to me adds a really distinctive, raisiny flavor, a little bit more of a mixed beer, a bit oranger in color.
Yeah, it's kind of like a burnt raisin almost. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I love that malt. I use a lot of the. Mm-hmm. A lot of the beers that I make. And then, you know, coincidentally, I was at my local homebrew supply store and getting the malts. I was trying to pull out 2 ounces of chocolate malt. Somehow I got 6 ounces. And that explains why my beer is
slightly darker.
Darker than I expected it to be.
Right, right.
I didn't realize, like, till I was, like, you know, I was mashing, you know, like 10 minutes into the mash, you know, looking at it, going, why is this so dark? You know, I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. And I go back and look. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I want to know, is how you knew. It was just by color.
Well,
so you're just assuming you put in, you know, a couple ounces more just by the color.
Yeah, I could tell someone, right. Yeah, okay. There's some beers I make, because what will happen, at least in my local homebrew supply store, you know, the dark malts, I just take them out of the bin that are already ground, because they store so well. They're so stable. I don't really care. I don't have to grind them myself. And they use a special grinder for those to get a finer grist, which is cool. But I get a lot of...
That might affect the extraction as well.
Yeah, so I get variability when I use chocolate malt. So most of the time when I use them, I'll take the measured amount, take it home, and I'll put that in a separate bag. Then I'll add it to the mash, and I'll judge by the mash color whether I'm going to get post-boil, actually. But that's, you know, because I watch that and I, you know, have it into my, like, loop. I can somewhat tell how it's going to turn out.
Well, same here. I have a kind of a Herm system. I have a Morbier system that you know, recirculates.
That'll give you a lot of color recirculation.
And there's a point in my process when it's recirculating that I can look at that liquid and I can tell you that's exactly what the color of the finished beer is going to be. And that includes, you know, the amount of yeast you pitch will affect the color.
Sure.
You know, the strain of yeast and the size of the cells, you know, the condition of the yeast will affect color.
Right.
You know, if you filter or anything, that'll affect color. But I can tell you, I guarantee you to no end, that's going to be the color at this one point.
Right.
And later on you know, it looks a lot darker or lighter, or you're thinking, oh, no, it's not going to turn out right. But I know this one point in my process that's the color it's going to be.
Yeah. That's just the thing you can do. You just observe the process and observe the take some visual measurement at the other end and weigh the two together over time.
You knew at that time before the beer was fermented in the fermenter, it was still in the mash, and you're like, there's an issue right there.
I even thought about
that's interesting.
Yeah. There's not much you can do.
You know. Now, how much do you think changing the crush affects color and flavor and things like that on those roasted malts?
I think it does a lot. That's like I said, I had that. I don't add the full amount into my mash until I see the color. I wait about 10-15 minutes.
So
then I'll add the rest if it's not dark enough yet.
So if we get a recipe from a brewer and they're like, well, I use 10% chocolate malt, and then we try it and it turns out too dark or too roasty or not dark enough, not roasty enough. Yeah, guy's not lying to us.
No,
it's because the process is slightly different. The crush is slightly different.
Right.
So what you need to do is kind of get used to dialing in based on. That's one of the things that I love about brewing classic styles. One of the most fine homebrew books out there, which you can buy in the Brewing Network store, is that all the recipes come from one source.
Yeah,
and so if something turns out too dark. Too roasty, to make an adjustment for your process, your grain mill and all that.
Right.
I was talking with Chad about his excellent brown porter, and it seemed a little too roasty. That might be the kind of crush that they're getting. I don't crush very, very aggressively, and maybe the mill that he's using is a little more aggressive, and he's getting a little more of that roast character. So he might back down on the roast a little bit. Well, that adjustment is going to apply across the entire book. It's going to apply across all those recipes.
Right.
So that's one of the disadvantages to getting your recipes from multiple sources like we're going to be getting on the show. We're going to have to make all sorts of adjustments and ask all sorts of questions from these brewers to kind of figure out maybe, what kind of crush are you getting? This one of the questions we should be asking on the interviews. Are you crushing like a madman, or are you just real gentle, or that actually may be a pretty good clue in trying to clone these, and it may save us a step in the brewing process.
Well, there's a practical nature here too. I mean, we can clone this beer or any beer, but the first time, the first attempt, it's usually pretty rare that you would like nail it, so to speak.
Yeah.
Just because of the difference in processes and, if you have like a consistent brewing method, obviously you've got a chance of now doing a minor adjustment in whatever hops, malts, fermentation temperature, whatever you think you need to do to make it be closer to the real beer. If you can control all the outside variables, then you can start, driving the beer home, so to speak. But it's cloning beers is not like it's as simple as just getting a recipe. There's a lot more involved.
Right. Well, I think that's an excellent point. You need to be consistent in your brewing. You need to have control over your process.
Right.
With control over your process, you can make adjustments in the recipe.
Right.
To account for differences between your process and someone else's process.
Right.
What's most important is that your process is consistent,
right,
that you can repeat what you're doing multiple times. So when you go ahead and change the recipe, you get the desired result instead of something totally different every time you brew.
Right.
The best brewers are consistent,
right,
and then they can make adjustments for there to account for what they're doing.
Right. And you can verify your consistency by making the same beer twice.
Yep. So, you mentioned a couple of things about the recipe that you did that you thought caused an issue. Too much chocolate malt and the maris otter. And what about hopping? I noticed the hopping was different between the two.
Yeah, my hopping schedule was, more traditional where, I got 24 of the IBUs in the boil. And the other, six IBUs are just late additions. Whereas Matt, in our meeting with him, as you all heard, he's got it the other way around. He's only got like 5 IBUs at 60 minutes, another 5 at 30, and then he has 20 basically at flame out. I mean, he just like throws a whole, big heavy dose right at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a completely different way. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's something new. He's different. He didn't, always do it that way. I think it's just something he's gravitated to, which is pretty cool. I mean, it takes a lot more hops to do it that way, for sure.
Mm-hmm. but you can't argue with the results either.
No, it's very good beer.
It's a great beer.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and Matt's all about the hop science.
Yeah, that's right.
One thing that guy knows.
Yeah, I bought him on hops. He knows hops.
There's nobody who knows more about hops.
Right.
Yeah.
Tommy broke in, he said.
Well, and so what would be the, you know, for people who are listening and are just desperate to brew this beer now.
Oh.
What's the recipe you would go with now, based on what you know? What would you do? Give us the rundown. And again, is this adjusted for 6 gallons and 70% efficiency?
Yeah, this is similar sort of parameters as you did. 6 gallons, 70% efficiency. Matt does a 75-minute boil. I'm outlining a 90-minute boil here. He's got a steam-fired kettle. I could see in that environment where you could really get, you know, really, really good boil, a really good boil-off rate,
uh-huh.
Whereas direct-fired, like most of us home brewers are doing, I don't think you could get that big of a boil-off.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I've seen that boil happen. Oh. I don't know if you guys have been down there.
No, I haven't.
I've never seen anything like it.
It comes up.
It's a really rigorous boil that he has there. It's amazing. Huh. Yeah.
Well, and most pro brewers, most commercial breweries don't do a really vigorous boil. It's kind of just bloop, 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 bloop across the top. You know, it's not jumping out.
He was cranking, huh?
It's violent. I looked down in there. It was the first word I thought was, it's violent. So that's interesting, Tasty, that you make that note that, you know, you might have to go longer because of how hard Matt goes.
Yeah, you want to get to 15%.
Long and hard.
Long and hard.
Matt goes long and hard.
Yeah.
He can isolate that and send him to
him. Yeah. That's right. Tell him we're talking about him. Anyway, so I'm looking for a beer here that has a starting gravity of 1050, 12.4 Plato, finishing gravity of about 110, 2.6 Plato. Probably finished at 10 to 12 or 14, it'd probably be just as good a beer. I'm shooting here for a attenuation of 79%. I think that with this yeast, the British ale yeast, that's achievable. IBUs 30, that's what Matt was describing to us. That's what we're going after here. Color of about 14.5 SRM. With that attenuation, an alcohol of about 5.2% ABV, which is about 4.1 by weight. Let's see, pre-roll gravity of 1.039. I don't know if people are concerned about that, but that equates to that 15% per hour boil-off rate. Malts, pretty much like Matt described it. Here, I'll give you this is a 6 gallon batch. 8 pounds of pale malt, Western Two Row, or 3.6 kilograms. 2 pounds of Maris Otter, or 907 grams. 0.85 pounds of Munich malt, or that'd be 386 grams. Crystal 75, about 0.70 pounds or 318 grams. Crystal 120, about a quarter of a pound or 113 grams. And chocolate malt, 0.12 pounds, which is 2 ounces, not six, for 54 grams. The chocolate malt is the 450L. Now, he mentioned some brands that he used. I think that he said the Crisp on the Crystal 75, and I used the Crisp C120. Some of those malts are available to home brewers, but not on a regular basis, right?
Hmm?
Can you ever use those? Malts, or are you getting?
It depends on where you go.
But there are shops that do carry those?
Almost everything. Almost, you know, you
usually
they
only have
magic.
One line of crystal malts. They usually go, you know,
right. Yeah. You know, Breese or Great Western. Yeah.
Right. Those are pretty common.
Yeah.
So that's the malt bill. Hop-wise, he got, you know, the initial 60-minute hops are 0.10 ounces of Magnum at 1310 alpha. That's 2.84 grams. Then at 30 minutes, 0.63 ounces are 17.72 grams of East Kent Goldings. That's a 4.20 alpha. Got a question? The 60-minute edition and the 30-minute edition are both about 5 IBUs, a little bit more. Then, and I'm not sure I'm interpreting. I interpreted you know, Matt's he's basically he does the big dose at Whirlpool. Well, most of us don't have the luxury of a Whirlpool that could spin for a half hour. So I'm just assuming here that we would do our late edition I'm assuming 1 minute or flame out. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make a whole lot of difference, but it is boiling at that 1 minute, so that right. that would get more extraction.
Well, unless you're using the Whirlpool chiller.
What's that,
Mr. Malty? Didn't come.
Oh, that's I don't know about that. Yeah, that's and, that's that solution in search of a problem, wasn't it? Yeah,
and you could run the Whirlpool and not turn on the chiller at that point. And,
yeah,
you could add a Whirlpool.
How fast does that go around? By the way, I was curious. I don't have that.
You're just gonna have to try it and see.
You know, like 1 second per revolution, or is it like can't? It's so fast you can't even see it, or
right. It's just so fast. It'll make you.
Does that work? Does it actually? Do you get a good? In the middle.
Yeah, it really doesn't have to go violently fast. As long as the outside liquid is moving faster than the inner liquid,
it just takes long. Yeah.
As long as it's rotating at all, everything will move to the center.
Physics takes over.
Yeah.
You can't stop it. Huh?
Yeah. All the particles are so light, it really doesn't take a whole lot of velocity difference.
All right. So at 1 minute, I'm saying 3 ounces of or 85 grams of East Kent Goldings and 3 ounces or 85 grams of Styrian Goldings. We're not going to be able to get Styrian Goldings. And Matt was suggesting Fugles as a replacement. Uh-huh. I could see just using East Kent Goldings as well. That is, do a double dose of the East Kent Goldings.
Well, I've always used Willamette as a
he mentioned
sub, but,
Willamette. Along
problem
with,
is that's hard to get too.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Somehow I have some.
Uh-huh.
He said the combination of Willamette and German tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen German tradition available to?
Yeah,
homebrewers.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. As a matter of fact, I have. Uh-huh. Some of the online homebrew shops seem to have it.
Nice. So he described a mashing schedule of 145F or 63C for 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a second rest at 155F or 68C for 15 minutes. And then he does brings up to a mash out temp of 168F or 76C for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Then he sparges off. I didn't ask him what his sparge water temp was, but mm-hmm. probably 170 or so, maybe 75.
And then fermentation?
Fermentation, he does 66F or 19C. He mentioned that he does a cool-in, which I guess mm-hmm. he comes in a little bit lower at 63F or 17C.
Uh-huh. And then raises up?
Then he raises it up a couple degrees. Mm-hmm. I do that a lot, too, because it's just so much easier to come in low and raise it up than to, like, come in high
and
try to cool it down.
Yep.
And it naturally wants to get warm anyway.
Uh-huh. And what yeast?
He said the WLP 005, the British ale yeast, or the Y yeast 1187.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I would use next time. He Burtonizes his water for this beer.
Uh-huh. So
you can see what you need to do. Add to your water to get it close to Burton.
Well, and I wouldn't go, strictly Burton. Nobody wants to brew with true Burton water.
Yeah.
You know, something
better
along those lines,
right.
But not quite so.
Right.
And then drink it.
Well,
as John Plisse was fond of saying.
But we want to get some of that nice oak flavor that Matt gets in his beer.
And then drink it.
We don't have the Burton system, but we do, coun't put some oak in there.
American?
I would get the Western oak, medium toast. That's pretty common. That's mm-hmm. almost always available. For the 6-gallon batch, I would use about an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
And I would put it in right when I pitched the yeast, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think the yeast consuming the oak flavors adds another element of oak flavor to the beer, I believe.
Hmm.
Whereas finished beer, it's not fermenting anymore, so you just put it against the oak. Mm-hmm. That gives you one flavor, but I think the having the oak flavor as part of the fermentation makes a difference.
Interesting.
Did you do that with your attempt here?
I was still had fermentation, but I was probably about 80% complete when I added the.
So not at pitching.
Yeah. No.
Okay. You don't worry about the fermentation blowing off any of the oak aromatics?
Well, I consider an ounce to be a pretty healthy dose of oak. If somebody didn't want as much oak flavor, I wouldn't. I could certainly recommend doing a half an ounce versus.
Although double barrel ale is a fairly oaky.
It is, but it's beer. It's fairly oaky. I don't know. That's another place where it's going to depend a lot on, you know. What I'm talking about oak cubes here, but if you used another format of oak, you might get a different result as well.
Right. Like a giant oak dildo that you stuffed into the carboy like Justin.
Yeah, or was it a chair leg from Home Depot or something like that? Okay. Don't ever use that, by the way.
So is the only thing that you changed there was where you placed the oak in? Or did you add oak in this, if you were to redo it, from your attempt?
Yeah, my attempt, I had oak.
It was totally jacked up.
It was oaked for 5 days.
Okay, so what did you just change in your recommendation?
I'm oaking
here?
For 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks,
yes.
But the same amount of oak is, I guess, what I want to know.
Yeah, so an ounce.
Okay, so still an ounce, but
right.
Just
same toast and everything
from pitching, and then for 2 weeks.
Right.
Okay.
Because I agree, my beer is not. It doesn't have a distinctive oak flavor.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what needs more. I think more would be a lot more. So I'm really bumping that up. So basically, what I'm describing here is the beer that I'm going to make. Next, you know, redo. It's a do-over.
Yeah, we will revisit
I'll brew
this.
It and we'll see what comes up.
Yeah, well, every beer that we take on the challenge, we will keep brewing that some again until we get that thing.
We're
going to
make this beer our bitch.
Yeah, there's no way we're not going to clone whatever beers that we take on. Now, if something's really hard to do, we'll just avoid it. And pretend like you never submitted that question.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Jamil.
complete honesty here.
Yeah. I was just thinking, man, this could get ugly. I hope we have an escape route.
Yeah, if there's something really hard, we'll just avoid it, and we'll say, well, no, I must not have gotten that email.
Yeah. Your email's broken.
Yeah. But we'll take on some really hard ones. We will. There's nothing more than we like than a hard one.
Jamil's been known to take on some hard ones.
Real
in his
hard
days.
Ones, yep.
And
I'd like the hard one.
You'll do it again.
Absolutely. How's the chat room looking? How are we?
They're doing okay. And you actually, a lot of their questions, there was quite a few. Tasty covered as he was going through what he would change the next time. There was one question, though, that I thought was worth talking about again. And the person mentioned, you want to know how you get 20 IBUs at Flameout. But the part of the question was, you know, when he punches into his beersmith at Flameout, it always says 0 IBUs.
Well, yeah, that's why I put down 1 minute, then you get something.
But that's the thing. I've talked to Matt about this before. And one of the things, and I can't remember the details, but I interviewed him for an article on like massive late hopping, and he was talking about the process, and I believe he said that they do like a 30-minute hot whirlpool. Don't hold me to that, but the point being, you got boiling wort in there. And then you add your hops and you whirlpool it for 30 minutes, and it's cooling down a little bit. But they're not chilling it at that point. So it's almost like adding it to the boil. And then, so you're volatilizing a lot of that stuff off of there. You're actually isomerizing some of the alpha acids. So that's why you get that bittering in those late additions in the whirlpool.
Okay. And another question that came through now was sort of how this show took on a different facet than the previous show where it was a successful clone, and that was some troubleshooting that you had to do.
Mm-hmm.
So a person had a troubleshooting question. For brewers who often don't end up with what they thought they would get, what is the best place to start if you're going to change something? Do you start with the recipe? Do you start with fermentation? Where does a brewer who keeps screwing up start?
It depends on the source of your recipe. Now, if your recipe is coming from something like, say, Brewing Classic Styles, 80 award-winning recipes you can brew, which you find in the Brewing Network store. People are just tired of me saying that now.
That's all right. I'm
not. Nobody laughs.
I'm not tired.
What were you saying?
if you're starting with a recipe you know is good and that should work out and you're having problems, then look to your process. Look to realize that the process of making wort is very forgiving. So that's generally not the problem. Although you can really screw it up. So it's not impossible to screw it up, but it takes an amount of really idiocy to do that. So most of the time it's fermentation, it's, bacterial contamination, things like that. So that tends to be the most common problem. Now, if you're starting with a recipe that you came up with yourself and you're not that well versed in recipe formulation, certainly that could be the issue. Or if you pull a recipe off the internet and it just sounded good, that could be it. But generally, we were talking about Chad's beers. It's so clear that the guy can brew great beer and that he pays very close attention to fermentation that when there's a problem, it's generally a recipe problem. It's, his process is slightly different and the recipes need, tweaking a little bit to really dial it in that last, instead of being a 45-point beer to make it a 50-point beer, it needs a little tweak. So most of the time, I would look towards fermentation, sanitation, and then, process, and then recipe last, although as long as you're starting with a solid recipe. Would you agree, Mike?
Absolutely. The beer is made in the ferment. That's where you can really have a pretty crappy recipe, and if you have a really good fermentation, you have a great-tasting beer. It may not be the beer you set out to make, to drink, but it will be a good beer.
Okay. Another question from the chat. Was about the beers that you said, we're going to take all sorts of suggestions. Are you going to do imports also, or is this just...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. No. There's no beer that's off limits.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Just if they're really hard, then we'll just skip those.
Yeah, then we won't do it. Okay, and that's it from the chat tonight, and they're doing a good job in there. They really liked this format with the troubleshooting, we had predicted that even the failures might make for good shows. So.
Or more educational.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Tasty, you can go away not feeling like a failure, but like a success. Tasty, okay?
Okay, then.
He was looking for your praise. That was really...
I still want a hug after the show.
For any of us.
Of course.
I'll still get my hug, won't I?
Your praise is really what matters.
You're right.
That's what it's all about. That's right. That's right.
So, did we brew it?
No, we did not.
No, we didn't. We failed on this one, but
we're adults. We can deal with this,
right? So we're batting 500 at this point.
Not bad.
That's not bad. And again, this isn't some BS. Oh yeah, this is add 1 ounce of this, and all of a sudden it's
we're not going to give you something that doesn't work.
No. This is a truly. A clone recipe you can bank on. You can be sure that what we give you is a straight poop. And if you can't do it off of these recipes, then then start looking towards your process and looking towards your fermentation.
Right.
All right. So another great show. Thank you, my dear friend Tasty.
My pleasure.
You being here and being with us.
We'll do it again.
Yeah, we'll knock out a couple of other great recipes coming up. And all thanks to our great sponsor, Northern Brewer. Visit them, www.northernbrewer.com. Tell them that we sent you, and make sure you buy all sorts of stuff from them. They're good folks, and keep this show running. Brewstrom.